Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind. I am Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs. Tennessee, a 69-3 winner over Chattanooga in the season opener on Saturday. We're going to break that game down from every different angle, look ahead to NC State, and take your questions here over the next hour on the Rocky Top Rewind. Do want to give a big shout out to our presenting sponsors. That is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is T and Trial Lawyers. Phone number for a free consultation if you have the need. That is 423-245-4185 for a free consultation. Or you can hit them up online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. That's Spivey King and Spivey LLP, the presenting sponsor of this show. Brent Hubbs, a lot to get into. Of course, it was pretty much what we expected. We'll have Matt Ray on towards the end of the show to kind of break down his thoughts as well. But 69-3, the final score. Tennessee racked up 700 yards of total offense, threw for over 400, ran for over 300, was really good in the red zone. But that's what's supposed to happen against an inferior opponent.
Yeah, no doubt. And we got a lot to get into, talk about that game. I want to talk a little bit about what we saw around the conference. We'll keep tabs on this LSU-USC game and kind of give you a thought on that one as it's going along as well. So we got a lot to get into tonight, but I think when you look at this game against Chattanooga, listen, Tennessee was supposed to manhandle Chattanooga. They did. The thing is, to me, is how efficient and clean Tennessee played. And I don't mean clean from the standpoint of there were no penalties or anything like that. I mean clean from the standpoint of, yeah, okay, the receiver's open, but he's not 5 yards down the field. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's not so wide open that he, you know, but he has to wait on the ball, or it's a sliding catch, or the ball's 3 or 5 yards behind him, or anything like that. I mean, there wasn't a bunch of missed tackles and things like that. I thought Tennessee played really efficient on both sides of the ball, as you're supposed to do against an inferior opponent like that. And I'm not knocking Chattanooga. We've talked about it on the Volquez podcast for months, right? I mean, they just can't compete. They don't have enough horses in the stable. It's not their fault. I don't think parity's drawing those teams closer and the group of five teams closer to anybody in the Power Five. In fact, it's probably creating greater separation. But Tennessee did what they needed to do, and I think that's a positive sign of maturity, a team that was ready to play. And now you turn your attention to an NC State team that everybody's trying to figure out who they are and what they're about after their opener against Western Carolina, where they did not take care of business against an opponent who's very similar to a Chattanooga, which makes this matchup this week interesting in terms of who grows and who improves the most from week one to week two.
Yeah, it's a big week for Tennessee, of course, a big-time challenge. Yeah, NC State did not look overwhelming, did not look great in their season opener against the Catamounts of Western Carolina there on Thursday night, but they got Power Five players. They got a good quarterback, and it's certainly going to be a bigger challenge for Tennessee this week. We'll see how much they improve from one week to the next, and going to be a whole lot of talk about that this week leading up to the game. Let's talk about Nico. Obviously, the biggest story. I know you touched on just a little bit there, but nothing you wrote about this. I've written about this. It's Chattanooga, sure, but nothing he did yesterday slowing that hype train. I mean, he started out 10-for-10. He was 10-for-10 beyond the line of scrimmage, between the hash marks. That's a third of the field that Tennessee didn't use a season ago. We've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter here today of everybody just kind of gushing over Nico. And recognize this, the safety and the linebacker play for an FCS Chattanooga, it's going to be better against NC State. Alabama, Florida, they're all going to have better players. But, you know, that pocket to the skinny post he put on Brazel there over two linebackers and a safety coming down and a safety over the top. I mean, that was a dynamic throw, and it set up the touchdown throw on the very next play to Dante Thornton. That was just one throw. It was an incomplete pass to Holden Stays, but seam right up the middle with the safety over top, linebacker playing underneath. That was a gorgeous throw, hitting Thornton in stride for a big gain down that sideline. Nico was really, really impressive. And from play number one, he got chased out of the pocket and still was able to keep his eyes downfield and make a play. He was excited. He did what he was supposed to, but that's certainly, his play yesterday is not going to slow the excitement level for any Tennessee fan, that's for sure.
No, and it's not. And as you mentioned, if you've been on social media at all today, I mean, and every analyst around the country is gushing about him. You got David Pollack gushing. You got Aaron Murray gushing about him. You know, you just got a bunch – everybody that watched highlights and watched him play and rewatched games gushed about the way that he played. I've spoke to some former coaches and former players and – You know, they all spoke highly of him and greatly of him. I mean, I talked to a couple of receivers, like, yeah, man, he would love for that to be – they got to be your quarterback, because he's going to throw you open. He's not going to put you in bad situations, you know, if he plays like that. And he's going to play with that kind of accuracy his career. I mean, that's the type of guy you want to play with, because he's going to protect you. He's going to put you in a good spot. And he was dynamic. And I thought the two throws back-to-back on that third drive were the throws of the day. The other stuff, there was some easier things. And, you know, timing on a deep ball is always interesting in week one, but this team was clearly, and those receivers were clearly in a good rhythm and time with each other, with Nico and the receivers. But those two throws, those two seeds he threw in the middle of the field, as Pat Ryan said on the Ball Network broadcast, those are pro throws. You know, that's a pro play. And to go into that tight window with the safety and the linebacker there, maybe you don't throw it against a Power 5 opponent because the window's not wide enough. But that wasn't a big old wide open window that he had. And he stuck the ball in there with great precision and accuracy. And that's why you left that field yesterday. And that's why a lot of people around the country are saying Tennessee has a chance. The depth they have on defense, the playmakers they have on offense, and a quarterback who's playing like that, your vibe on Tennessee is totally different. Not saying that they're going to win it and all those things, but you look around, you didn't leave the stadium yesterday saying, boy, they really lack in these areas to have a chance to be where they want to be at the end of the year. Texas A&M sang a different tune today, right? They're not sure their quarterback can get them where they need to be. Now, they were playing a top 10 opponent, very different, but they have questions there. NC State fans are going, you know, wait a minute. We got this guy in, you know, Grayson McCall, but he didn't play very well in the first game. So what do we have at quarterback? All those types of things are out there. And Tennessee's quarterback play had everybody skipping going out of Neyland Stadium, even though it was 187 degrees. They were excited about where they were at, for sure.
I want to talk more Nico and kind of a segue from Nico into a part of the offense that we didn't see an awful lot last year was explosive plays. Recognizing Chattanooga, but the explosive plays were there in an abundance yesterday. But Michael brings up a good point. I want to get your thought on this. Tennessee ran two Utah passes down there on third down inside the red zone. I believe both of those were inside the red zone. One to Cam Seldon. If he would have spun to the left instead of the right, maybe he still go and picks up that first down. What did you think about the Utah pass usage twice yesterday in short proximity?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that that's suddenly a staple in there. I mean, that's obviously something they saw or they felt like that wrinkle could be used. Maybe they put that wrinkle in for NC State and other teams to look at it to try to slow down a pass rush because that's a possibility. You know, I don't think that suddenly that they sat around all summer long going, all right, new staple in our offense is going to be Utah pass. No. I think they showed that for whatever reason. There'll be something to come out off of that. But a lot of times that's done to slow down a pass rush and try to give guys something to think about. And now if you're an opponent, you've got to at least acknowledge it, right? I mean, I don't know if anybody's seen that clip, but there's a clip from Jimmy Johnson, the second Super Bowl the Cowboys played against the Bills, the one indoors in Atlanta, not the one in California. Not the Leon Lett Super Bowl, but the next one that they played. There's a video clip out there that's bouncing around, and a lot of coaches use it and show it to their sports information directors and publicists and people like that, where Jimmy Johnson says he was sitting in the hotel room the week of the Super Bowl, and he was watching a news report, and they were showing B-roll of the Bills. And in that B-roll, they showed Jim Kelly throwing a just in warm-up stuff, like during stretch period, basically. Kelly was practicing that pitch to Thurman Thomas in the Utah stuff. And he asked his defensive coordinator, Butch Davis at the time, said, hey, has Buffalo shown the Utah pass all year long? Have they run that? They went back and looked and said, no, they haven't shown it anywhere. He goes, well, we need to be prepared for it. Buffalo ran it twice in the Super Bowl, three times in the Super Bowl. They got a total of like negative 6 yards out of it. They never made a positive down on it. And it's just – coaches use it now to go, this is why I close practice. This is why you're not shooting mesh. This is why you're not shooting red zone. This is why you're not shooting all these things and you're not staying and watching. My point is coaches a lot of times are just putting stuff in, you know, to try to give everybody else things to think about. And I think that's what Tennessee was doing. I mean, why do you run a fly sweep to Brew McCoy early in the game? Just you throw enough out there without giving away your playbook. You throw enough out there that you're trying to slow down angle, you're trying to slow down pursuit and those types of things. It's what coaches are looking at doing.
Yep, that was Brew McCoy's first touch coming back from injury.
And it might be his last jet sweep of his career. I mean, I don't know that that's a staple in his arsenal, but listen, if you're NC State, you're sort of thinking about it. I mean, you know, now if you're Tennessee preparing for NC State, and it wasn't new stuff because they've done this before, but you have to figure out where KC Concepcion's at, right? I mean, he's all over the place. And NC State needed him to be all over the place in that game to win against Western Carolina. But anywhere he's at, you're going to give pause because there's all kinds of misdirection stuff they run with him.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. Tennessee secondary is going to have a whole lot to deal with that young man. We'll break him down and we'll preview those matchups all week long. Utah pass, it's a really good play call on third. And, you know, when it's a passing down, you pin your ears back, you get off running upfield in a hurry, and then you just kind of throw it underneath. Tennessee's ran that a little bit. But again, I agree, just kind of putting it on tape, running it twice yesterday, just giving everybody something to think about.
Yeah, I think this too. I'm sorry. I mean, one thing too about, you know, Utah passes, screen passes, those types of things. I think defenses run so well now that they're not as effective as they used to be. From time to time, you can catch some people on that, but I don't think those plays are as effective as they used to be because defenses run so well. Now you can run into a blitz sometimes and pop a big play. I think we saw that in the A&M Notre Dame game some, but when you start setting up a screen pass, man, the recovery ability of defensive tackles and the way that they move now and some other stuff, I don't know that those plays are nearly as effective. I think Tennessee would have loved to continue to take deep shots yesterday too, instead of throw some of the short stuff. But, I mean, the short stuff was there. It was 5 yards anytime they wanted to get it because the corner was lining up 7 yards off the ball and backing up as soon as the ball was snapped. So you could raise up and throw that 5 yard play every time you want to, because clearly Chattanooga was going to try to keep you from getting behind them as much as they could in the way that they played their secondary play.
Yeah. And you still saw Thornton get behind him a couple of times. Brazel get behind him a couple of times. Tennessee talking about Nico and yes, recognizing Chattanooga is an FCS and it's an inferior opponent, but return of the explosive plays. I wrote about this over the site today. Tennessee had 53 offensive plays a year ago of 20 yards or more. He had eight. That was from your day after. They had eight yesterday. Tennessee had seven passing plays that went for 15 yards or more down the field. They had eight running plays that surpassed 10 yards. Okay, those are pretty good chunk plays. And all but one of Tennessee's offensive scoring drives on offense that ended in points, there were 10 of them. Nine included splash plays, included explosive plays somewhere in that drive. So kind of going back to people are saying, well, this offense looked more like 2022. You know, we don't know that after one game against UTC, but 2022 had splash plays. 2022 had explosive plays. And on 9 of the 10 offensive scoring possessions yesterday, there was an explosive play in that series. I mean, you know, Sampson a couple of times had over 10-yard rush on the first one. He set up his own score on the second one, or set up the Davis TD catch in the second scoring drive. Brew McCoy down inside the 10-yard line. Deshaun Bishop down inside the 10-yard line, so far and so forth. So I thought the explosive play with Nico at the helm was something that was one of my biggest takeaways leaving Neyland yesterday, saying, okay, well, this offense is going to be fun. Let's see what it looks like against NC State and the SEC. But, you know, Joe Milton and that Tennessee team last year played Austin Peay. They played some inferior opponents and certainly didn't look that capable offensively.
Yeah, and I think it's more than just Joe, too. I mean, I think Joe was a part of it, but I think it was more than just Joe. I think it was what they were at the receiver position, particularly early in the year, you know, the first eight games or so, because Dante Thornton was just – he was MIA as a slot receiver. I like Squirrel White, but I don't consider Squirrel White a big play threat. I just don't think that that's – I don't think that's really his game. Brew McCoy got hurt. That changed that. And Brew's not the big vertical down play. I mean, I know he can get down there. He caught one against Pittsburgh in 22. And I mean, he has some of that ability, but he's kind of a bruiser as well, right? I mean, throw him the 5 yard hitch and let him drag somebody 3 or 4 yards and that type of thing. I think Chris Brazel can be a big play weapon. I know that he didn't get the touchdown, but he caught both those balls in the end zone. Gastamore just threw them late, but he was open. I think he can be a big play weapon. Thornton obviously can. I think McCoy can do more than he's done previously because I think he's leaner and I think he's running better. We haven't seen Mike Matthews yet, but I think that they have more options to be big play threats than certainly they had last year. And Nico can make them can make those throws. And I think that's a big part of this as well. It's hard to score in college football or any football. I mean, it's hard to score in the NFL if you don't get a chunk play in college football. I mean, if you watched any of A&M and Notre Dame, that was a low scoring affair on the touchdown drives, on their scoring drives, chunk play. Because it's hard to line up and go 14 plays, 74 yards, and take 8.5 minutes off the clock and do that with any kind of regularity. It's just hard to do. You've got to be able to go punt and get those chunk plays. I mean, that's what Nick Saban figured out after he played that 13-10 national championship game with LSU. He went and he evolved in his offense. Lane Kiffin and others, they started spreading it out. They started throwing and getting chunk plays, and all of a sudden – it's a lot easier to score than it is when you're just going to methodically try to run it down the field. So you have to have them. Tennessee didn't have enough of them last year. It's why they went 8-4. Big part of why they went 8-4. I think the red zone inefficiencies was the other part. That's a great start. I don't care who you're playing. It's a great start to have 8 chunk plays.
Yep, and having said that, Tennessee still did march right down the field, scored on 11-play drive. Towards the end of the game, they went 17 plays, 80 yards. With reserves, those are always good to see. But as you said, you can't count on that to be any type of regularity in this day and age of college football. We are saving a lot of your questions. Ask your questions. We'll answer your questions as the show goes on. But do want to give a shout out to our presenting sponsor. That is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That's T and Trial Lawyers. They specialize in DUI, assault, personal injuries such as car wrecks, accidents, divorce, custody, alimony, parental rights, all that and more. They have 80 years of combined experience. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout the state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm's got a vast amount of trial experience, with the practice being in place for 43 years. This specific partnership, since 2012, also has partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. Practicing primarily in Northeast Tennessee, at the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas, the firm has won multiple awards, and you have attorneys who are rated by super lawyers in the Mid-South with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP can be there to help you. So if you want a free consultation, pick up the phone, dial this number, 423-245-4185. That is 423-245-4185 for a free consultation. Or go online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. T and Trial Lawyers. More of the Rocky Top Rewind. That is coming up next. Welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night here on the VolQuest YouTube channel. I appreciate you guys for joining us here, sending in your questions. We'll have Matt Ray coming on in about 20 minutes, recapping from every different angle this Tennessee 69-3 win over Chattanooga. Do want to answer some of your questions? We'll go to Michael, it's a good question for you, Hubs. What percentage of the offensive playbook do you think UT used yesterday? 25%, 50%? What say you?
Oh, I'd say 25 to 30%. I mean, I don't know that they use their entire playbook all year long. They have a lot of stuff in there that they just, they never get to, or the matchup doesn't seem to work or it doesn't make sense to use that. I mean, we saw the return of the tight end lead, in the run game, which I love. I think that's a part that kind of turns them into an I formation team. But to answer his question, I would say that they did not. I don't think we saw a switch route, did we? Did we see a vertical switch route?
I didn't.
I don't think they got the man coverage they were looking for, or got anything kind of pressed up where they could run that because of the way they were playing. So, I don't think they showed anything in their man and their, man offense in terms of going against man defense, pressure defense, because they didn't see a lot of that yesterday. So I would say certainly less than 50%.
Yeah. And there was a question on the board. I didn't see it. Maybe I missed it, but I didn't see them stack an awful lot on the outside. Right. And a lot of times that's when they switch and everything. I think we'll see, of course, this offense evolve and certainly evolve to the game plan and the personnel that you're going up against every single week. Let's go to the offensive line. It's got a question here from Michael. Break down the O-line, especially tackle play. Again, this is Chattanooga. We continue to say that, but Brent, I don't care who you're playing. You have over 700 yards of total offense, 400 yards passing, 300 yards on the ground. Offensive line did what it was supposed to. Now, I did see, and we talked about this last week entering the game, I saw Lance Hurd get really tired and get really lazy a couple of times. John Campbell got really tired and held on that defensive end and wouldn't let go. I think a lot of that is just first game. Those guys have been missing some practice lately, just trying to get their breath. I thought maybe fatigue led to some lackluster technique at times. But overall, I thought the offensive line did fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, you know, I don't think Larry Johnson had a great day as a backup guy, but I think their starting five.
Yeah,
I think their starting five was fine. They went really fast right out of the gate. I mean, really fast. And I was kind of wondering who was sucking air really bad right at the end. And I thought they got through that first drive pretty good. But, you know, I mean, think about what happened. They go out, they get the ball, they drive the length of the field at a rapid pace. Three snaps later, they get the football back because Chattanooga turns the football over. And so they're right back out there. And, you know, I thought they handled it pretty well. I thought they're in pretty decent shape, particularly Hurd and Campbell, who had not played a lot in the preseason and everything. I thought they held up. I thought they held up fine. Perfect? No. Plenty to work on? Absolutely. But I thought they were pretty solid overall.
Mike says, we got to mention Tyree West's two big hits. I broke it down. I know you broke it down in your pieces today as well. The forced fumble, he played that great. It was Will Brooks that took C-gap. It was Arian Carter that took B-gap. It was Omar Norman Law that was clogging up the middle, so that running back had nowhere to go. He looked back, and just like playing that piano, working down the line of scrimmage, it was Tyree West, and he was there just to lay the guy out. Ball pops loose. Joshua Josephs, who set the edge. It wasn't, Rodney will say that he didn't set it well enough, and I would agree, but he did enough to force it back inside. He was there to jump on that ball. That was a big play. And then his sack, just clobbered the guy, just used pure speed off the edge there, clobbered the guy, and how he held on to that football, I'm not sure. But Tyree West seems to be picking up kind of where he left off last year in the Citrus Bowl. He's playing good football, and he'll continue to be a heavy part of that rotation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think he's doing I think he's doing great work, and I think he's getting better. You know, he's lost some weight. He's leaned out. I think he's moving better than he's been. I thought in the rewatch, and I remembered it was happening live. I tried to note it, but I thought that's what happened, but I went back and watched it on the rewatch. Pretty amazing. Two snaps into the game, they put in four new defensive linemen.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was because Rodney didn't like the first two plays. And really, I thought the defensive line on play number one played the stretch run perfectly.
It was Carter that overran it. Yeah.
He just overran the play. He was so excited and so quick, he overran it to allow the cutback lane. Then they gave up a little pass on the second down play for a first down. They call a timeout, and Rodney's like, shift change. We need four more in there. You know, I'm like, they played two snaps, coach. And so, but I like where West is, and I mentioned this in the 10 things I think I learned. You know, Tyree West is a guy who's kind of been forgotten about. He's not, you know, he's a good player who's got a lot of talent, but he's kind of, you know, we talk about Joseph's in the Rabbits package, right? And then it's Bailey and it's Jenkins and it's Weathersby and, you know, what's Jordan Ross going to grow into and all these things. And everybody kind of forgets Tyree West is hanging around out there. And you go look at what he did at the last regular season game against Vanderbilt, the bowl game, and yesterday. Great production, a lot of negative plays, really played well. I think he's playing with a ton of confidence last night or right now. And listen, Chattanooga dropped back. They ran one true drop back, and their quarterback got just eaten by Tyree West. And that was the last time Rusty Wright said, okay, we're not doing that anymore. Get it out of your hands. We're not going to get him beat up because we need him to play in the rest of the season for us. We're getting out of any kind of drop back stuff. They never ran another true drop back again. So pretty interesting where they were. And I think Tyree West played well. I'm pretty excited about where he played.
Yeah. I mean, when you're looking at the, you know, the game book after the game and all that, and you're sitting there doing the post game mini pod. And then I came home, did a podcast, doing all my stuff today. it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm nitpicking here. Like, I would have liked, if I'm a Tennessee fan, I would have, or a Tennessee coach, I would have loved to have seen a couple more takeaways in a game like this. At the end of the day, you held an opponent at 3 points, and when they were throwing the football, he was getting it out of his hands. He was not throwing it down the field hardly at all. And so, like, your chances to get sacks were minimized. And so, anybody worried about that, I wouldn't spend a whole lot of time worrying about that. Now, they'll have opportunities this week for sure against NC State and Grace McCall, no doubt about that. What'd you think about Boo Carter? Boo Carter got in there, played, I think he played 30 snaps, according to Pro Football Focus, flying around. I thought he blitzed really well. Other times, I think that he was, you know, over-pursuing or maybe not as close to the receiver he should have been covering in terms of tight coverage at times. I mean, just typical young guy, freshman, but overall I thought that he did all right in his first collegiate outing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's a hard position. They're asking him to do a lot of stuff, as you know. And, you know, Boo Carter's going to be a really good player. Is he going to be the honey badger week one? No. I mean, he's going to have to learn and grow. I would certainly like to see him be the punt returner. I'm disappointed he fair caught that ball. Probably not as disappointed as he is that he fair caught that ball, because I would like to have seen what that looked like. I think he's dynamic in that role. Boo's going to be fine. I mean, he is. I mean, is he going to be a rock star right out of the gate? I mean, no. I mean, what freshman is a rock star out of the gate? Everybody talks about Nico. I mean, Nico did sit for a year and watch and learn. You know what I'm saying? So Boo Carter's got plenty to learn. He'll be just fine.
Do want to welcome onto the show a guy that was in-house, a guy that was part of the pre-game, post-game coverage and did some hits during the game, but a guy that is really, really liking Tennessee's quarterback, and that is Nico Iamaleava. He is from the SEC Network. His name is Peter Burns. Peter, thanks so much for joining us, man. How you doing?
What's up, boys? Let me make sure I get a good picture over here. I'm over at the at my parents' house right here, as you can see all the stuff. And I had to wear the LSU stuff, because we're hoping LSU there. I just saw that they gave up the touchdown to USC, so I'm already in a bad mood, and I'm still sober, so that's not good. It's not a good mood to watch right now. So, man, I had a blast. I'll be honest with you. You know, we started that show for the 12:45 kickoff, and you know, this is the first time we did it, and I don't think our tech people knew how many people. Between the flyover and all of that, there was like 100,000 people there. It was crazy. And I'm telling you, it was 145 degrees on that field. And the only thing hotter was Nico's arm, man. That kid has got something special. And it's fun to watch this offense develop the way it did.
You know, Peter, you've seen everybody. I mean, you've watched everybody play. I've looked at your Twitter. You're watching tape and you're checking out all the games that you can check out. I mean, it is overreaction Sunday night. It's overreaction Monday and overreaction Tuesday for everybody, right? Is the Nico love affair, is that an overreaction, or is that everybody understanding the value of quarterback play? I mean, how do you qualify when you look around at all these games that were 75-2 or 8, you know, the scores that were so outlandish in those pay games? How do you qualify that as an analyst?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you have to do is you have to take everything with a grain of salt, right? Like, if it's good, you're going to go, all right, well, hey, well, what was the competition that you had, right? I mean, you know, you look at next week when you're facing NC State. I mean, obviously, that's going to be a step up in the weight class than what the mocks are bringing this over on Saturday. But to me, I go back and look at times in the past couple of years where I've seen an Auburn lose to a New Mexico State, or I've seen some of these teams that just look flat out. I mean, go look at South Carolina, you know, trying to replace Spencer Rattler in what happened. And, you know, they struggled with Lenora Sellers against Old Dominion. So, you know, that's it's almost like whenever people complain about, well, what'd you shoot? No, I shot 65, but I didn't play the back tees, right? Like, you still shot 65, right?
It counts.
Yeah, I mean, it still counts. You still made a bunch of birdies. And, you know, to me, the one thing that I needed to see is I wanted to see Nico throw the ball, something we didn't get a chance to see a whole lot in the bowl game. He did that, and it was frozen ropes. He was in command the entire time. I wanted to see the offensive line look really good. And really, it's almost how you see when a player comes off the field. Eric and Brent, you guys know it. The body language of how a team responds to him. And I felt, hey, when you got a kid, even though he was there on the team last year, everybody looked to him as that, hey, quiet leader. Like, what are we doing? the moment never seemed too big for him. And I've seen that with five-star recruits, right? That all of a sudden we hype these guys to have a cannon of an arm, but when they start playing, you're like, all right, maybe it's a little different. I mean, I don't want to get over to – I think it sucks because I sit there and I go, I don't want to blow up this kid too much, and yet I see it with my eyes, and I'm like, he's going to be so damn good, especially in Heupel's offense.
Everybody talks about Nico. Everybody wants to see Nico play, and that's awesome. Yeah. Something you took note of, and according to your Twitter, when you left the stadium, was like, hey, you know, if you stay healthy behind this offensive line, Tennessee's run game is going to be a problem yet again. And everybody thinks Josh Heupel's offense, they let it rip, they throw all over the place. It all starts with the run, just like any football team, but Josh Heupel's offense starts with the run. Dylan Sampson had a hat trick in the first half yesterday. Again, it's Chattanooga, but really talented player. Running behind Lance Hurd, who I know you're familiar with, John Campbell, seventh year in college, Cooper Mays at center, Javonte Spraggins, a four-year starter. The run game can be a best friend to Nico and allow that God-given ability to shine in some of these bigger games.
Yeah, I don't think there's a doubt about that. And that's, I mean, you look at it, what, the third most starts of any offensive line in Division One. I mean, that's impressive. And I think Heupel knows about that. I mean, that's the mark that everybody – it's the same, kind of the same thing with Lane Kiffin at Oxford down at Ole Miss, is that they think Lane is a, hey, throw the ball all over the park type coach. Well, he's not. You go look at the run splits, and it's almost like 65-35. He likes to run the ball. So it's just the threat of the home run pass that opens up that's going to be huge when, if you can get Brew McCoy and Squirrel White to go out there and have that success. And the way that Heupel has his spreads and how far they spread the field, that's what ultimately makes Dylan, you know, or Dylan be able to take off that much. I mean, it was an embarrassment of riches right from the jump. And then on the flip side of it, real quick, guys, I really wanted to see defensively what that team was going to look like. And the amount of depth, I mean, you just go back and look at defensively how many guys got in. I think Tennessee ended up playing somewhat like 90 players got in this game. I love that. You know, give them a little bit of rotation, keep everybody fresh. I mean, how many snaps did Pierce play?
10.
I mean, 10?
Yeah.
I like that. You know, just give them a little taste, get them out there, because you need them for NC State. You need them for Alabama. You need them for all these other games, not against the Mocs.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee played one defensive lineman 20 snaps. Everybody else was under 20 yesterday. Now, they played 17, which they will not do against NC State. Let's be real honest here. I mean, there were a half, you know, four or five guys that will not play. But they're going to go 12 or 13 deep on the defensive line, which is really unheard of in college football.
But you have to have it now, Brent. I mean, you think about it. If you want this team to be a college football playoff contender and even win a game, the days of just having six guys that are going to just play out there, the Booger McFarland types or Ndamukong Suh back in the day that are there almost every single snap, I don't think you can do it, especially with the way that this conference ends up being just so physical week in and week out. And I think that's good. I mean, listen, we all kind of made fun of, and I was making fun of some of the Tennessee guys about, like, come on, your depth chart had, what, 75 different ORs? Like, what are
36,
we
doing? Literally, 36.
I mean, it might as well have been 360, right? But I think everybody in that locker room knows the pecking order. And sure. So, you know, and the last thing, and at first I was like, man, this is kind of not weak sauce. But then I start understanding a little bit more, going, hey, the last thing I need to have is mom and dad making a phone call or an agent making a phone call and being like, why am I second string against Chattanooga? Like, it doesn't matter.
That's the world we live in today, right? That those are conversations. Those are things that you have to sit around in meetings and think about, hey, do we need to play this a little different? Do we need to manage this a little different?
Yeah. But how would General Nealon have taken that? I don't think he would have taken too kindly to that back in the day.
I want to talk about your show in just a second, but I do want to ask you this big picture or bigger picture entire conference. I'm sure Billy Napier in Florida is at the top of that list, but what are your three storylines or your handful of storylines going into week two? I know LSU is still playing, but as you look at this conference, what's your takeaways right now?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is, I mean, Georgia's become that gold standard. I called it 2 years ago where I just thought, and I'd seen Kirby, the way that he's built that program under the way, you know, Nick Saban did. And it's just a younger version of Nick Saban where he's just almost obsessed with perfection and he damn near is achieving it right now. What is it, 40 straight regular season wins? I mean, he's won 24 straight in SEC play, which is almost unheard of. And, I mean, they just absolutely dog-walked Clemson. I mean, they embarrassed him. And Dabo's going to have to take a real look at himself about, hey, is it time maybe that I just – if I don't love this and I'm not going to adapt, you almost owe it to Clemson to step away if you're not going to – if you're not going to go look at the transfer portal going forward. So I think Georgia's one of those at that point. I mean, I know it's a Tennessee show with you guys, but Nico and the way that this offense looked like makes me really think about, hey, could this be a college football playoff team if they're healthy? I think on the flip side of it too, I think I expected Florida to have some struggles this year, so that didn't necessarily surprise me. I was surprised that A&M and Connor Wigman did not play very well in that game. I thought offensively, you know, Wigman, what he showed me last year, some flashes where I thought he was going to be good. I thought the defense was great, but man, I was really disappointed. And as an LSU fan, guys, it reminded me of those like 2010, 2015 teams of LSU. They had great defense, great skill position players. And they, I mean, like, it was like, no offense, Brent, it was like you at quarterback right now. Like, I mean, you know.
And they couldn't get anybody the ball. I mean, couldn't get anybody the ball.
I mean, when your quarterback is literally throwing up in the middle of the game, that was just like the perfect example of what in the world was going on with the offense. By the way, all I know, and Eric, do you have the game on right now? Are you watching the game? No or yes?
I'm watching it, yeah.
Okay. All I know is I heard my dad upstairs going crazy and clapping. Does that mean there was an LSU score, or what's going on?
You're going to like it whenever you get out this interview. You're going to like it for sure.
Let's go.
All right, last question, then I'm going to let you go because I promised you what I do. We do greatly appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Your schedule is all over the map, right? I mean, we're going to hear you on radio. We're going to see you in all this other stuff. Tell me about the Saturday show. Where did the concept from this come from? And I mean, do you just have carte blanche freedom? Like, you just kind of go create your own show each week? It's got to be a blast, right?
It's a blast. I mean, I got to respect, you know, because normally I'm back in studio all the time. So, you know, for me, I sit there and I've got, you know, we're catering, we're watching all the games and stuff like that. But to be boots on the ground, they basically were like, hey, we want to do a show each week right before the 12:45 game kicks off. And so, you know, instead of trying to be game day or trying to be SEC Nation or something, I said, well, if we're going to do this show, let's show everything that's like near and dear to somebody's heart. Because let's be honest with you. How many people are going to be watching Georgia Clemson versus who's going to be watching Tennessee Chattanooga? Well, Tennessee fans, right, are going to watch that. So I went in there to Knoxville. I'm like, what can we do? And so we did something that was really cool with Vol Navy. You know, we did the Vol walk with Heupel. That was fun. We had Danny White in. Zakai Ziegler's telling me about how he would play the cello and that he's really good at it and, you know, talking about that. So, you know, each week we're going to try to be there and just do things that are really, really kind of unique to the traditions, frankly, is what it comes down to. As you can see, my dad's a happy camper. So everything must have gone well. What did I miss right there? Oh, he's telling me. It's a touchdown. Okay, good.
All right.
Eric was just sitting here telling me about, he was like giving me the television tease, you know, like, just, you're going to like it. To hell with that.
It's a great catch. Great catch.
Yeah, but that's what my dad says. So, again, it goes in, like, next week we're going to be at over at A&M, so we're going to try to do some unique stuff. And it's a work in progress. So I know Vol fans love, you know, watching us. They're very, you know, vocal on Twitter. And so,
no.
Unfortunately, right in the last segment that we had, it's 100,000 people. The flyover's happening. Everybody's got their phone out, and our equipment just went haywire. It was crazy. We got some of the best engineers out there, and like our mics weren't working. The feed was real fuzzy, and I was like, "All right, end of the show." I don't know how it went, and I checked social media and Twitter, and Vol Twitter was just going off like, never be on television again. You ruined the entire experience. I was like, oh, man, we were so close. So, and we had some tech issues over at halftime, but we're working through that stuff, man. But they're trying to just be boots on the ground and give, like, those people who are going to watch those 12:45 games something to watch.
Well, it's really cool. I think it's a great concept. You'll do a fantastic job with it. Best of luck with it. I know the tech will get – all cleaned up. It won't be 147 at every venue you go to throughout the season.
I was going to go tear it up with Grant Firkin downtown, and we were going to go out. We were going to have a big night. And I was at 5 o'clock. I'm like, done. I can't. I'm in a glass case of emotion. I am just sweating. I got swamp ass. I'm just like, I got nothing left in me. I was like, if I had one beer, I'd fall on the floor. So I'll rally the next time, and hopefully it's there for a Tennessee thing. But I know you guys got to go, man. But I'm telling you, like, I remember at the spring tour, I went down when Butch Jones was there in like 2015, and I knew there was something blossoming there, and like in knew that fan base was ready to go. I saw it in 2022 when Heupel and Hooker and all those guys went there. But what I experienced this weekend against Chattanooga, of all things, Tennessee's a damn sleeping giant. And the way that Danny White's got this thing going, the collective is in good shape. Heupel is like the perfect coach for it, who's not going to get too over his skis. This offensive scheme is going to be fun. And now you got Nico for a couple years. Like, I mean, if you're buying stock, I don't think you can buy stock in a better value than Tennessee football right now in the country.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch for us. I know it's going to be fun for you to cover. We'll talk to you on the radio. We'll hear you on the radio. We'll see you on shows on Saturdays. And good luck keeping your calendar straight and being everywhere you're supposed to be. But it's awesome for you to join us. We certainly appreciate your time. Go enjoy your Tigers tonight. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, sir.
I hope they beat the hell out of USC. All right, man. Y'all have a good one. Good night, boys.
Thanks, Peter. Appreciate you. Burns, SEC Network. And again, as Brent said, you can hear him every morning on SiriusXM Radio. You can see him on SEC Network just about every single day. He's going to lead into the 12:45 game every Saturday on the SEC Network. So great stuff there. Hey, we'll come back. We'll answer some more of your questions. We will get Matt Ray's take on what he saw from Tennessee over on Saturday. 69-3, the final score. Tennessee over Chattanooga, 1-0, heading into NC State week in Charlotte, neutral side game. We'll be back on the Rocky Top Rewind here in just a minute. Hey, welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night during football season right here at VolQuest.com and the VolQuest on the YouTube channel, presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. All right, the opening back, that was Peter Burns. Now we have Matt Ray on to join the show. Matt, thanks for coming on, man. What were some of the – you were down there on the field, sideline, you were shooting. What were some of your biggest takeaways that maybe we didn't see in the box on Saturday?
They lied about the heat index, buddy. You should have hammered the over because it was hotter than what they said. First, Eric, I think kind of right away in pregame, one of the first things I noticed for Tennessee, this team just continues to look different. I mean, again, you've seen it in practice, but they look more – like what an SEC football team should look like that's going to compete. You know, Brent, you talked about it earlier in the show, with the rotation along the defensive line. But really, when you just look at guys like Jordan Ross, Caleb Herring, the guys behind James Pierce, like that room just looks completely transformed from the time that Josh Heupel got here. And then, I thought for Tennessee overall, I thought for game one, you handled business the way you should have. Was everything perfect? No, but you were pretty clean operationally. The tempo seemed to tick up. I thought you couldn't. Yeah, there's going to be teach tape, obviously, from any game. But I thought things went very well for Tennessee in game one. And again, it was Chattanooga, but you saw what you needed to see from them with a big game coming up against NC State next Saturday.
You know, for me, Matt, and you talk about it from being down there. I don't think Chris Brazel's getting talked about probably enough. I think that his emergence in this offense as you go forward, if you're a defensive coordinator and you're scouting Tennessee and you're thinking, okay, well, wait, who's this number one that's running deep routes all of a sudden, right? Because we didn't see him last year, because when he started doing that, he got hurt pretty much immediately. Yep. We know about Brew McCoy. He's coming off the injury. He might be a little bit slow, but he didn't look slow in game one. And then they got this 17. Where did this guy come from? Plus Dylan Sampson. I mean, it's not just Nico that should be causing some defensive coordinators headaches, right? I don't think people talk about the variety of weapons, not just the depth, but the variety of weapons that Tennessee's got on offense. And I think Brazel's going to be right at the top of that list when this thing really gets cranked up here in the coming months.
Yeah, I think so. That second incompletion in the end zone from Gaston Moore, I mean, he was open early. but then he got covered up, and it just felt like, you know, what's going to happen here? He effortlessly glided up and caught that football, got pushed out of bounds, obviously, but you just kind of saw the natural bounce and the athleticism from him. And I thought what you saw from him working shorter in the game, you know, we had seen from Jalen Hyatt in years past where it was, you know, make a move, get open on out route to the sidelines, but then nothing really comes with that. You saw that from Chris Brazel, and he broke a couple of tackles and looked shifty. You know, and I think for him, Brent, it was important for him, but he was in that game later because Tennessee needed to get him some live reps. You know, I mean, obviously he's been here for a little bit, but he hasn't suited up in, you know, orange and white in a game for Tennessee up until this point. So you needed to get him some reps, but his emergence feels like it's just a matter of time. He's going to keep making plays for Tennessee, and he's another guy that he can really stretch the field too, I think. And Dante Thornton, he just looked comfortable yesterday. But Chris Brazel is going to open up a lot of things for this Tennessee offense, in my opinion. I think you're absolutely right.
Didn't want to say this when Peter was on the show, but boy, LSU's defense mid-season form here in the opener, giving up a big long reception down inside the red zone here in the second quarter. Matt, again, down there on the sideline during games, something Peter brought up that I've been wondering about all offseason, saw it a little bit in spring, saw it a little bit in fall camp, but you know, we know about Nico's ability at the quarterback position. He's a soft-spoken kid. He's not a very loud, rah-rah guy. But as a quarterback of an offense, you are thrust into a leadership role. You're the leader, right? You got to get after your guys. You got to communicate with your offensive lineman. You got to talk to your tight ends, your wide receivers. A couple of times, and especially on the replay earlier today, I saw Nico walk over and talk to Brew. I saw Nico walk over and talk to Ethan Davis when they had a miscommunication. Did you pick up on any of that stuff? You know, Nico communicating, leading on the sideline, how do they respond to him, stuff like that during the game?
Yeah, I did. And I think, Eric, he's a guy that he is soft-spoken. He's been that way since we've got to know him, since the first time he ever made it out here, you know, in November of 2022. You know, you're talking about a guy that I think when he does speak, because of the way that he handles everything else, guys listen. You know, he really handles his business the right way. But I felt like yesterday it felt like he was in command of that offense. You know, obviously his performance indicates that. I mean, he was excellent from that standpoint. But I felt like in all aspects it looked like Nico was operating at a very high level. You know, in terms of just commanding the offense, and that's what you want to see. It never felt like he was uncomfortable at any point. And then when he did have to come over and have conversations with guys, yeah, it felt like those were productive. You know, obviously when you're putting up 45 points and a half, there's not a lot to iron out, but there are still little things to iron out. That 2-minute drill wasn't, you know, what Tennessee would have hoped that it would have been. And, you know, they had to punt there at another time. So, I feel like overall from Nico, you saw some things that you wanted to see in game one, and you're going to face more adversity here in game two. So you're going to get more answers about that. But, you know, overall, really good day in terms of that aspect as well.
You know, Matt and Eric jump in here too. I think the other thing you're, when you're breaking this thing down and you're looking at it, you're, you know, you say, well, this looked good, but they're playing Chattanooga, but you know, this type thing. Did we learn anything about the secondary in this game? Because that's the one – I mean, I think we all agree they're going to be fine at left tackle or left guard, wherever they kind of go there. But did we really learn anything about the secondary, or are we kind of still where we were with the secondary even after seeing 12 guys play back there, 15 guys play back there?
Matt, I would say we are still very much where we were. I liked a lot of Will Brooks coming down and playing run support, right? But I already knew that that's kind of what he did a little bit last year, even playing star. I thought Brooks and Turrentine had a bad series together. Turrentine missed 2 tackles on a series. Brooks was given a lot of cushion and man-to-man coverage. That was actually the series that they kicked the field goal, you know. But I thought they all played solid. I thought Charles played fine. I thought Jacoby Thomas flashed, but I knew McCoy, or at least I thought McCoy was going to be really good, and I thought he played well yesterday. I knew that Jordan Matthews and Caleb Beasley, when they got in there, would be a work in progress. I guess I didn't learn anything about the secondary yesterday. Did you, Matt?
No, I didn't. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I thought Jacoby Thomas flashed. I thought he'd come down and made a couple of nice plays. Boo Carter flashed. Again, at times, though, he looked like a freshman. There were a couple of reps where, you know, he kind of looked lost out in space. He's athletic enough against the Chattanooga to make up for that, you know, but he's a freshman. You're not going to expect him to come in and do all of those things well in, you know, week one. But overall, I think we're very much in wait and see mode with the secondary, and it's going to be a tougher test this week. The Concepcion kid, Grayson McCall's going to extend passes. Noah Rogers made some plays. The you know, tight end there is a bigger body kid that can get out and make some plays. So Tennessee's going to get tested, you know, this week. So we're going to learn more about the secondary this week, but I think we're very much wait and see right now.
So Brent, they need to continue to rotate. They need to get Ricky Gibson in there. They need to play those three corners. They need to play Jacoby Thomas at star. They need to rotate Harrison Boo at star. They need to get Jacoby Thomas in their safety. They need to rotate and play all those guys, because as you wrote about, you didn't learn anything, right? So until someone creates separation, play all those guys.
Well, and you're going to learn about them this week. I mean, yeah. You know, now maybe the defensive front can get there, and it's all about getting it out of the hands quickly. But, I mean, KC Concepcion can play, and they can use him in a variety of different ways. He's going to tax and stretch the defense because they're going to line him up all over the place and move him around and all those types of things. And then Noah Rogers can play. I mean, he can athletically put all kinds of stress on you out there. So I think we're going to learn more, but I think we're also going to get a better feel for the defensive front's pass rush, because Chattanooga was like, hey, we're going to chip and we're going to throw. It's a chip and throw is what we're doing up there. You're not getting home. As I mentioned earlier, I think they had one true drop back, and that ended up in a really, really, really bad sack for Chattanooga and a big hit by Tyree West. So, you know, you're going to learn a lot between week one and week two. I don't think there's anything in the secondary you come away with and go, man, I don't think you're any more queasy about them or more worried about them. I just don't think they answered any of the questions because they weren't challenged because of what you were getting out of a Chattanooga offense. So we'll see what that looks like out there for sure. So lots of fun stuff. I mean, lots of good storylines going into this one. We'll see how much these two teams grow from one game to the next.
Hey, Matt, answer this question here from Austin. Says, hey, GMAC, objectively bad against CPA, looked like a five-star against Brentwood High this week. Should we expect that level of play every week, what we saw from GMAC this past weekend?
Well, I can promise you he expects it. You know, I talked to him on Tuesday after that CPA game, you know, just casual conversation, and, you know, there was a level of frustration from him just because he didn't feel like he had done enough. And I feel like even in that game against CPA, yes, he threw that pick late, and that was a bad throw, obviously, trying to force something in there that he shouldn't have. On the drive before, I thought the linebacker made a pretty good play on what could have been a pick six, but still probably his second, you know, worst throw of the night. But for the most part, CPA was dropping eight in coverage on third and seven, second and 12, you know, when Brentwood didn't have a lot going. And he still felt like he wasn't doing enough, didn't extend the play enough. You know, he's a guy that expects that level of play. And I thought it was a really good sign to see Brentwood Academy come out and let him sling the ball. I think he went for close to 300 yards, had a couple of really nice throws down the field. That's what he's accustomed to, and that's the level that he expects to play at. And I think if you see Brentwood Academy continue to open that playbook up and try to let him make those type plays, and yeah, I think you can expect that. You know, he has to have some protection. He has to have some guys create separation. Brentwood Academy's banged up on the outside right now. Not a lot of playmakers, but yeah, I mean, for George, he expects that week in and week out. And I think, you know, even last year during that, you know, really rough season, we saw him make some plays down the field, a really nice throw down the seam against the Baylor team that, you know, obviously went on to do what they did and won the state championship. So you have to open it up. And if he has time, he can make those throws. I don't think there's any reason to kind of overreact to what we saw week one against CPA.
Well, I think it's also worth noting, if I'm not mistaken, I think they had two touchdown passes called back due to penalty in this game Friday night, and I think they had two field goals blocked. So his numbers could have been and the score could have been different, but his numbers could have been even better as well. So, you know, I think that was an overreaction week one deal. You know what I mean? I think George is plenty good enough, Matt. It's just he doesn't have a ton of help around him, but they've got to play to his skill set if Brentwood Academy is going to try to be the best version of who they can be this year.
Yeah, absolutely, Brent. There's no doubt about that.
couple of questions I want to get to before we say goodbye here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Todd chimes in. How great was it to see Satterwhite play a bunch at center? That's a huge plus. Just like Gass and Moore. Yeah, Brent celebrating.
I've only been talking about backup center for 6 months. So
I don't have the snap count in front of me, but Satterwhite had to play at least 20 snaps.
Played 24 or 26, something like that.
Gass and Moore played, 23 snaps? You never know what can happen. Obviously, the center of the future, but also what if Coop goes down at some point this year? You got Dane Davis, of course, but it was great to get some real in-game, not just a series of mop-up duty for both those guys and some of these other guys. I thought it was interesting, Brent, when they took, you know, the starting five out, and they, you know, Lampley played a little bit more, but they took, you know, Davis out, and they went to a lot of these freshmen and young guys over some of the guys who have maybe already been on roster for a year. They came later in the game, but, you know, Satterwhite came in over Lang. You saw Jesse Perry come in. You saw Bennett Warren come in. Thought it was interesting, and it was good to see those guys getting some work in.
Well, remember what Glenn Ellerbe said late in spring practice about, you know, how he told all those young guys, look, spring's going to be really hard, but you're going to be better for it at the end. And I think you're seeing the results of what they went through in spring as midterm enrollees. Now, Bennett Warren wasn't one of those, but those other guys were. I mean, to think, if you would have told me that Jesse Perry was going to play 25 snaps in the season opener of his first college game of his career, coming out of what system he played in high school. And I'm not knocking those guys because they did what they needed to do to win a state title, you know. But to play in that system and then a year later, less than a year later, Matt, he's playing in a college football game. That says a lot to me about Jesse Perry and where he's at right now and what the future can be for him, because that's a pretty good growth in a short period of time for a guy who was learning what pass protection was all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, Brent, look back to last June, at the end of June, Jesse Perry's already committed to Tennessee, but he came out here. He wanted to camp with him. He wanted to get that feel for Glenn Ellerbe. And then I think for him, he just got in here and, you know, has been a sponge, clearly, because like you said, there's no concept of pass protection there where he was at. And that's not a knock, because they did win a state championship. But that's a big adjustment to make and then come in and play 25 snaps and look solid doing it. You know, early in the season, I looked out there and I'm like, man, there's Jesse Perry. They're driving down the field. But there's Jesse Perry. Wait a minute. Here we go. And then I kind of focused in on him over a couple plays, and he had some good reps. You know, again, it's Chattanooga, but those are valuable reps. Those aren't reps against somebody that you're lining up against every day, that you've started to learn their skill set, what their go-to move is, what they're going to try to do to, you know, to win that rep. You're lining up against somebody that you really don't know that much about. So I thought for Jesse Perry, that was great to see.
Well, and I'll say this, kudos to Josh Heupel for just shutting it down. Okay, listen, there's no point in taking chances here. We've got to play these young guys and get some guys ready. We didn't toy around in the third quarter to get some more stats or to do this or to do that. We're not worried about whether or not we can come out of the locker room to start the second half the right way, because nobody's focused when you're coming out in a 45-0 game or whatever the score was at the half. Kudos to that coaching staff for saying, you know what, let's make the second half as valuable as we can make it for a bunch of young football players. That's not commonplace with coaches. I credit this coaching staff for doing that on Saturday. That was as big of a win as anything for them this weekend.
So it wasn't like, you know, I remember last year against Austin Peay, I think Tennessee was up 30-3 or something at halftime. I know the game ended up being 30-13, but 30-3, and I remember Joe Milton came back out with a knee brace on to begin the third quarter. It's like, what are we doing? None of that here in the season opener. That was great to see. At least young guys getting in there, Gaston Moore getting in there, and Tennessee checks notes still 169-3. Jordan Ross, shout out, got a block punt, special teams touchdown. That was awesome to see. And Jordan Ross flashed on defense there in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, quick note on the block punt. Obviously, that was not a called block by Mike Eckler and Tennessee's special teams unit there. I think Chattanooga lined up with 10 guys on the field. And I think Rusty Wright was like, you know what, guys? Teaching point for my guys. Let's play it out, and whatever happens, happens. And what happened, I don't think he envisioned a block punt touchdown given up at that point. But, you know, Jordan Ross could play, and his athlete, I mean, most athletic play made, Matt, was he scooped. I mean, he scooped that thing in stride and kept going, because it was not a Sunday hop for him.
No, it wasn't. And I know if you follow VolQuest.com, you see the practice highlights every morning, and we see that turnover circuit, that ball bouncing, and those Rodney getting mad, you know, scooping it the right way. You saw it from Jordan Ross. I mean, it was very athletic play. But Eric, you're right. He flashed on defense, and I think Jordan Ross's situation's unique, kind of like James Pierce was. A guy, 5-star coming in, didn't get here until the summer, right? But already, you know, going to flash some potential. Now, he's got more depth ahead of him than James Pierce had, I feel like, at that point. But Jordan Ross is going to be just fine here at Tennessee, and, you know, way to kick off his career.
I'm going to tell you what, if you're a Leo and not named James Pierce, you better go to work every day. And James Pierce better be in that crew of working every day, because Rodney will play, as we talked about off the top of the show. Third snap in, he rotated 4 guys on the defensive front. I don't think that was in the script to do, but he decided to rotate there for whatever reason. You better show up to work every day. Jordan Ross has made some fast strides. It's hard for you to look at that film of what he did and say he doesn't deserve the possibility of some more opportunities to see what he can do against better competition, because he's going to be a fine, fine football player.
And I'm intrigued about this guy as well. I know we're 2 minutes past. We got to get out of here. But, I mean, Dylan Sampson's your RB1. Kim Seldon is going to get some run, no pun intended. Old Deshaun Bishop just did what he did all fall camp. He just played well. You know, had a couple of nice explosive plays. Deshaun Bishop is trying to carve out a little part in this offense, and I thought he did what was needed to do yesterday for him to continue to be in that conversation in terms of playing time.
Yeah, Matt, it doesn't feel to me, and I think Peyton Lewis is trying to get his feet wet. You can tell that's a guy who didn't go through spring. He was limited some in the summer. You know, and he's trying to get his feet under him. And he wasn't playing behind the same line, you know, that Deshaun and Bishop was playing behind. But it feels like right now Tennessee's top 3 running backs are Sampson, Seldon, and Deshaun Bishop. And Bishop should be in that conversation, because I don't think there's a big gap right now between Seldon and Bishop. Okay, and that's a credit to Bishop. That's not that Cam Seldon's way behind. I think that's a credit to what Deshaun Bishop's done. How can you not be comfortable if you're Tennessee's offensive coaching staff if Deshaun Bishop's in the game? I don't think there's anything to suggest he can't succeed in the SEC in this offense as a running back.
No, I agree 100%. He made the most of his opportunity with Cam Seldon being sidelined, and has continued to make the most of the opportunities that he's got since then. And I thought he looked good yesterday. I thought he was patient. You know, again, you're talking about a guy that missed, you know, I guess all of last season, right, with an injury.
Yeah.
You know, so hasn't seen live action against another team at this level. And he was patient, not running up his lineman, really set his blocks up. You know, I thought Deshaun Bishop looked really good, and I'm with you, Brent. If you're Tennessee, you have to feel pretty comfortable, you know, if you have to put Deshaun Bishop in the game. I think he's going to have plenty of opportunity.
Prior to yesterday's game, the last game action Deshaun Bishop got was the 2022 Rivalry Showcase there at the beginning of December. So it had been a minute. A lot more to break down from this game.
Very, very patient runner. I mean, he's very, very patient. By the way, shout out to you two guys for representing the company VolQuest tonight on the show. My Eagles beat Hall, so I decided to represent the fighting Dustin Minitz and the Gibbs Eagles tonight. So shout out to the Eagles for the win over Halls. But shout out to you guys for representing the company the right way. I should probably learn something about that, right? I saw Brady Hughes earlier. That's what you're looking for.
That's what I'm looking for, yeah.
I saw that. Pretty good tackle by Brady Hughes in overtime to give the Eagles a chance to get that win. So shout out to the fighting Dustin Minitz.
I'm going to be moving over there to that territory here pretty soon in the next month or so, so maybe I'll have to get me a gift shirt. All right. Appreciate you guys for tuning in, checking us out here on the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night, live YouTube show from 8 to 9 o'clock, or like tonight, 9:06 is when we'll call quits. Big shout out to Spivey King and Spivey LLP for being the presenting sponsor of the show. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers. If you need help with a divorce, if you've been in an accident, alimony, custody of your children, whatever the case may be, contact Exterior Home Solutions today for a free consultation. Pick up the phone, 423-245-4185, or online at Spivey King and Spivey LLP.
Hey, shout out to your light tonight. Good night for the light.
So I plugged it into a different outlet. I plugged it into the computer instead of my little lamp over here, and it lasted an hour. Maybe that's the solution. There we go.
There you go.
Start the week off strong,
it's
baby. Like,
what are we doing, man? It's 9:07. There's ball on. What are we doing right now?
Appreciate you guys for tuning in. We'll be at it all week long here at VolQuest.com, getting you set for Tennessee and NC State in Charlotte. All that and more this week over at VolQuest.com. Good night, everybody.